Okay, so let's continue a little bit from yesterday. This is the kind of architecture that we are going to be looking at for most of this course. And we had talked about yesterday what a database is. And a database is a collection of data that's logically connected. So here in a database system, you may have many databases running and administered by the same database server and the same within the same system. So there might be, I can show you later on my computer, I have number of databases, one for exam questions I've been making, one for just some sample, one for your assignments. You've got different databases. And for each within each database, the data that's stored somehow belongs together. So typically, you will create different databases if you have data that aren't really tightly connected. And then, as we talked about yesterday, we don't directly access data on database files. We go through the database management system. And today we'll talk more about the services that the database management system typically provides. And I mentioned this small part down here, the metadata, that we call the system catalog or data dictionary, which is also part of the database system. It's how the database system is able to manage the various databases. It knows what tables are in the database. It knows what users will have access to that data. And then we have the application software that is interfacing the database management system for operating the database. But the database is going to be working in an environment. So that environment, as we talked about, we have the data and the metadata. You know the familiar with the concept of metadata, data about data. So that's also what we call the schema. That's what describes the various users and tables and elements in the database. And then we have both hardware and software, because in the end we need some hardware here, both for running the database server and for storing. So we need hardware for storing data. And of course, software, database management system that we're going to be directly interfacing, but it's running on the operating system. And in our case, we will be looking at web technologies, web servers, and then we also have networks. So database server may be running one place, the application or the web server another place, and the client software a third place. So we have network software in between. And then of course the application programs that would typically run inside the application server that's interfacing the databases. But in such a system, we also have people. We'll talk a little bit about various users that we have to address and think about in database systems. And we have a number of procedures, both when it comes to the design and the use of the database. And some people, as we'll see later on, will be responsible for these procedures. The users. We have the end users, and we have both naive users and we have sophisticated users. Who here is working in the information security? And you heard about SQL injection and hacking. So that's something that we will be looking at a little bit later, and these tend to be sophisticated users. Then we have the application programmers, the database designers, the administrators, both database administrators and data administrators. So if we have this database, and typically this will run inside a database server. And then we have the application server. Sorry, I was saying yesterday that my handwriting isn't very good. So I'm going to be saying what I write. If you wonder what I've been writing, then just ask me. And also, if I'm too fast when I speak, just ask me to slow down. And then typically the users would run some client software. And in our case, that would typically be a browser. So the application programmers, the end users are here. So these are the end users. The application programmers will typically develop the software that is running and interfacing the database. And you will be, even if you aren't into the development degrees, you're more on operational management and information security, we will for some time develop some applications, and you will see how some of the issues and challenges of developing an application. Then we have what's the DBAs, and typical features or typical responsibilities of a database administrator is to run backup, is to make sure that the software here is up to date, that we have all the patches installed. It is to, when you want a new database, it's to create the database, is to administer which users would have access to the various databases. So that's basically operating the database system. Then the question is, what is the data administrator? You have an idea what responsibilities and tasks of a data administrator could be? That's the database administrator. The data. That's also the database administrator. He will make sure that you buy more disks, that you build up good hierarchy of various storage media. It's actually the one responsible for the quality of the data, which means what standards do we follow? What are the accepted values for certain fields? What formats are we using? So it's the quality of the data, not the system issues are here. And it has to do with hardware, software, and updates and procedures. But this goes more on the data. So if you have many users who have access to enter new data, then you may have like naming problems. For instance, if you, let's say that you have a set of classes. Let's go to somebody or a manufacturer of wine. Okay, so you have red wine, rose wine, and you have white wine. Now, if you have a table here that keeps track of types of wines, and somebody is allowed to enter new types of wines, this may end up having same class, having different names. You may have classes that aren't agreed upon. So the data administrator is responsible for the quality of the data. That's important here. And it's in many ways an underused role, underused task, because in the end, the quality of the system depends on the quality of data. And if no one is paying attention to what data we use, and especially in this world of tagging, where everybody can add a tag, whatever tag they like, you have the problems that two tags may mean the same thing, and you may have typos in tags, so it can easily be a kind of messy situation in the quality of data. Okay, so we'll start by looking at a little bit of the history, and maybe history is kind of boring because we have kind of outgrown some of the old technologies, but as you will see in this case, some of the old ways of thinking are returning, are coming back. And I think it's interesting to see the various, historically, the various types of databases. The first one, the first generation, we had what we call the hierarchical and the network databases. I'll give you some examples later on. You have, you are having through this course on algorithms now, aren't you? So we're going to be talking about trees and tree traversal, and we'll talk about graphs. This is basically what we talk about here. Hierarchies are the same as trees. Networks are graphs. Then the second generation databases will be the relational databases, which is what we're going to spend most of the time in this course on the on database issues. We're going to talk about relational databases. But we're going to meet hierarchical databases or hierarchical data quite a lot as well. Any ideas? We look at the course content. Any suggestions what would be hierarchical data? Yesterday we talked about XML. We're going to spend quite some time on XML. An XML is a tree. An XML document has one root element, that may have children, and the children may have children, and children may have children. So that's a tree structure. So we're going to be already meeting tree structure data when we talk about XML. The relational database, it's typically a relation is to say is being used for a table. You know that you've seen the database, those who have seen the relational database, we will see a table with rows and columns. Columns will be the attributes, and the rows will be each object that we have. The third generation, we're kind of extending on the relational. You had the object relational and object oriented databases. They didn't make so much of a fuss. But then the fourth generation, which is out there right now, we'll talk about it a little bit later in the course. You have the big table that's Google has been using for indexing the whole big web. You have key value stores, you have document databases, graph databases, you have semantic web databases, and they all are slumped together in what's called NoSQL. Interesting thing here is that the document databases are hierarchical databases. So we're back to the hierarchical databases here. The graph databases are the same as the network databases. Triple store will also be a type of graph database. So let's see how many bullet points you need to go down here. It's related databases. Company started in 82 with 24 employees. Last year there were 136,000 employees in the company. Sorry? Any suggestions? Oracle, exactly. They had 2.5 million revenue when they started, 37 billion last year. Redwood CA, Larry Ellison, plus a couple of others, and they made the first commercial SQL-based or relational database. There were some prototypes and some lab implementations before, but Oracle was the first one, and still a big player. And MySQL, that most of you might be using MariaDB, was bought by or acquired by Oracle in 2010. That's why MariaDB came out, because the community still wanted a community server, not just the Oracle version. Okay. Unfortunately, today and the first part of Friday, we'll be talking a little bit general. But then towards the end of Friday and next week, we're going to be going into application development, talk about PHP and PDO and testing database applications. But for the very first couple of lectures here, we're going to be quite generic. In database, we typically have two languages. There's usually one language, but the language, you could classify it into two sub-languages. One is the DML, which is data manipulation language. That's the one you use for getting data, querying data, inserting data, deleting data in the database. So if you refer to this, these are the databases. Then we have the data dictionary here. And the, what you could say, the DML would be the operations that we do to change the data. When we add a new object in the database, or we retrieve rows from the table, or we delete data. The data definition language is the language we use for changing the schema, for dealing with how the tables look like, what tables we have, what are the columns that we have in the table. So DDL is what we use for creating and modifying metadata, or for creating tables, for manipulating the structure of the databases. While the manipulation language, DML, is for actually manipulating the content of the databases. When we talk about SQL, SQL is both. In SQL, that we're going to be, Dipti is going to go through with you, we're going to be looking at DML operations for querying the database, inserting, modifying data in the database. And you will be using DDL for creating tables and for adding foreign keys, adding primary keys, adding indexes. All these operations are operations on the metadata. The system catalog, talked about it. It stores whatever structure that we have in the databases. And then we have mechanisms for controlling access to data. We'll talk about them later on in the course, but just to summarize, we have a security system. That means that when you log in to your database, you typically use a username and password. And based on the username and password, the database will see what your rights are, what you could possibly do, which databases you can see, which databases you can modify, what you can do on the database, various databases. And then there is an integrity system. The purpose of the integrity system is to make sure that when you have links on the internet, when you click on the page and you get 404 page not found, you have probably met that quite so often. You find a link, there's something interesting, and you try to follow the link, and then the page doesn't exist anymore. You have a reference that's dangling. There's no document on the other side. We don't want that to happen in the database. So whenever in the database, when one object refers to the other, we will never allow that object to be deleted and the reference to still be there. That's called integrity. We make sure that if there is a referential integrity, if there is a link from one element to the other, then if we want to delete, then either we have to delete both the link and the element, or we don't allow the element to be deleted until the link was deleted first. So this is what the integrity system is doing. It's also making sure that if you have a primary key, that's a unique key, the integrity system makes sure that you can't insert another element with the same key, because it's ensuring that data and data integrity is taken control. The concurrency control system is so that if you have two users and both users want to modify a data element, it's locking the database in a way so that one get to do all his updates first before the other one does the updates. So this is what we're going to talk about at the very end of the course. Then we have the recovery control system. And the purpose of the recovery control system is to make sure that if this database crashes, then it's being rebuilt before users get to go back and see data. So if you have transaction, let's say you're going to transfer money from your savings account to your regular account, your check account, and if power went off after you had withdrawn 100 euro or dollars, whatever, Norwegian kroner, well, 1,000 Norwegian kroner, because otherwise it wouldn't hurt that much. A couple of thousand kroner from your savings account, the electricity, the power, there's a spike in the power supply, whatever, and the database stops, which means that we have taken out 2,000 kroner here that was supposed to go in there. Now it's been drawn from here, but we haven't entered it here yet. And if the power goes off, then when you start off, you have lost 2,000 kroner. We can't have that to happen. So what's going to happen is that we make sure that after 2,000 is withdrawn, you have to add 2,000 here before the database says, now I'm happy and up to date again. If the power goes off, the recovery manager will find that here was something broken and would reinsert the 2,000 kroner into your savings account before it allows any applications to run. We're going to talk a lot about recovery towards the end of the course. I have more or less a week talking about recovery and security. So, this is kind of the animal that we're going to be struggling with, or that we're going to benefit from. Because when in the programming courses so far, when you have created a file system for storing data, you have to do basically all of these things. Oops, sorry. All of these things to give the kind of functionality that end users want. Because we have the types of users here, we have the programmers, application programmers. They develop programs that will request operations in the database. That will be processed, the DML preprocessor. We're trying to say, are you inserting data? Are you deleting data? Or what do you want to modify? And it's using the query processor to actually get the data from the database, the data that you're going to modify or the data you're going to delete. And of course, the dictionary manager is the one here that knows what file would that record be on. What do I need to search to find the actual physical record, the physical data? And the database manager is the one that is actually managing, interfacing the data. And you use the dictionary manager to find data, and the database manager is the one that actually puts data into buffer and makes whatever changes. When you want to write data back to the database manager is passing this to the file manager. The file manager knows exactly how these files are laid out. Database manager knows on which files various data is, but actually the actual control of access to the file. I will talk a little bit about this towards the end of the course when we talk about indexes and how to get fast access, because the file manager has some access methods and there are some system buffers that caches data from the database. And the reason for this down here is to have high performance databases, because you don't want to necessarily write all the data back to the data to the file or to the file system or to the disks, because writing the disk might be slow, and it's easier or it's better to cache up quite a few changes and do them all in once rather than have to wait for disk continuously. So that's the file manager that decides when is the proper time to access the database. And users will typically use the query processor to find data, look at data. The database administrator will then use the DDL compiler that will change the dictionary, which then the dictionary manager is responsible for. There's quite a lot of functionality inside the DBMS, and this is just a part of it. This one doesn't say much about the security and the integrity that also comes on top of this. So there is a more detailed figure that you could find later on. So why all this complexity? Because the database management system is providing services for all the different types of users. And of course, the most important part is to store data inside the database, and to retrieve data from the database. The reason for storing is that we want to find it again, and then whatever updates. And the integrity service, as we talked about, so if you try to delete something that is referred to, the database will make sure that either we stop that from happening or we automatically delete the reference as well. Then you have concurrency control services that make sure that many users can update the database at the same time without making problems for each other. So for instance, if I try to move money from my savings account to my checking account because I want to buy something, and my wife at the same time, she has access to my account, thinks that I'm having too much money on my checking account, she wants to put money back in the savings account, then of course, when these two things, if they were happening at the same time, it's not very clear what might be the outcome if the database doesn't make sure that they don't conflict. And that's what the transaction support is. And recovery services would be to bring the database back into consistent state if you have a disk failure or if just the power went off so that the database server stops from working. We have authorization services, means that users need to log on, identify themselves, and based on who they are, they get certain privileges in the database. Utility services like import and export and convert and compress data, number of such services. And then of course then the dictionary that you may, as an application provider or developer, you may also use the dictionary to provide tools that will don't need to understand everything. So PHP MyAdmin, for instance. PHP MyAdmin is a web application that's interfacing MySQL to show what the databases are and how to operate. And PHP MyAdmin wouldn't be able to operate on the database if you couldn't get the dictionary to see who are the users, what's the data, what are the tables. So that catalog is quite useful. And something that you haven't seen before, because when you made a file system, then you documented the record structure inside your program. But no one else could understand it other than by looking at your program to see how the records were laid out, because you don't have the record structure stored explicitly in the format that applications can easily read. So these are the main reasons for having a database. Is for us as application developers, we don't have to worry about user access. We don't have to worry about integrity control. We don't have to worry about what happens if the database crashes. We don't have to worry about multiple users accessing data at the same time. We leave that to the DBMS. We just worry about writing the application so that it can get the data it needs and insert the data or modify, make the modifications. But by having a database, we also have the possibility of enforcing data standards. Talked a little bit about that yesterday, in that when you have a file-based system, you have different files from different departments, and they may see the world in different ways. Now, by having a shared database, all applications, all users would need to share the data, the view of the data, and the standards. And there's an economy of scale in that the database works well. If you need more power, if you have more users, you could buy a more powerful machine. You can start distributing over many machines. So you can, as needs grow, you can scale it up. If everything is stored in one file system, it's very hard to scale it up when you have many users. And there's a balance of requirements in that we can here both have high performance and at the same time easy access ad hoc ways and from various applications. You can balance the various application requirements much better ways than if you had a file-based system. Easier access to the database and responsiveness, as long as you could pay the price it would be to buy a big machine. Productivity, because we don't have to develop all that functionality that the database management system is providing. So we don't have to worry about user access. So we don't have to worry about concurrency and control. We don't have to worry about these things. And if we had to, then we would need to implement all that functionality. Now that's left to the database. And maintenance is improved in that typically these systems come with a whole suite of management tools that we could use for managing the database. But nothing comes for free. So there are some disadvantages. One is complexity. And for us as developers, one of the complexities is that inside the relational database, we have data in one form. Data is spread over a number of tables that we need to join. But inside our programs, we have objects and classes. So there is a what they call an impedance mismatch between the data format inside the database and in our system. And whenever we need to build on something, we need to connect to the database and set up the query and get the data rather than just read a quick file. So what we need is just to store some configuration data. We may not want to use a database for that purpose. It has some complexity. And also, the database itself, it needs data dictionary and it needs to run all the services. So it takes both sites, both in terms of storage space and also in terms of processing power, how much processing power you need to run all this rather than just read a simple file. Then, of course, you have the cost. Now with MariaDB, there is no direct cost to buy it, but there is a cost on, personnel cost, because you need to know these things. You need to invest in everybody getting to learn to use and investing in using it. A question? That varies a little bit. In typical relational databases, if you store images, they would typically be small images. But we'll talk about there are some data types, for instance, in MariaDB and MySQL called blob, binary large object, which is just a big digital object. But the databases tend to be developed for quick access to small amounts of data. So typically, very large objects would slow down your system. So what you tend to do is to have icons in the database, small images and small representative videos, and then you have a separate media server that manages the complex data. But you will see there are specific databases that have special additions. So Oracle, for instance, have some special additions for free text and for images. So you could buy kind of extensions that have more specialized support for that type of data. So there are some additional hardware costs. We need possibly to run the database management system on a server, and you may need some big disk arrays for storing the data. And there may be some cost of converting data. You may have data in one format, and you may need to convert them to store, to have them in the format that you want to store. And you may need, if you implement a database, you may need to port and change existing software to use the database rather than the existing solution. Performance. We are centralizing all operations, and if some of these operations could be run locally, then there is a hit on performance. And if, since it's a centralized system, if the database stops, all users have a problem. If you have it on your file and your computer stops, then everybody else is fine because they have their own files. Now, in a centralized system, if the database stops, no one can do anything. So when databases stop, it has quite some impact on the users. So it's not like databases would always be the right answer, but in many cases it will be. And hopefully throughout this course, by knowing more about the database functionality, you would be in a good position to choose whether you should use a database or not when you develop an application. And secondly, hopefully you get to understand in what cases a relational database is the right answer and in what cases you should go for something else. We will, as I was saying yesterday, we will focus mainly on relational databases in this course. But hopefully through the XML part and what we talk about a little bit in NoSQL, you will also understand some of the limitations and some of the disadvantages of a relational database and be able to look at other solutions. Because in the end, there are some key questions to ask, and that can come down to, if nothing else, to money. And one question is, what is more expensive? Hardware and system cost? Because if you get up a database, you need to buy the database, you need to invest in expertise in that system, and you need more hardware and software and more work to do to keep it up to date. But if you compare that to the cost of developing, administering, and maintaining the data, then you'll find that it's more expensive to waste time and efforts on the development and maintenance, and it's cheaper to buy the hardware and invest into it. But not always. MySQL, PHP MyAdmin, give you a little bit, and hopefully, have you started to install XAMPP? Some of you tried it. It worked without too much pain. One thumb up, that's good. Hopefully it works for a while. As I was saying, MySQL was an open source project that Oracle decided to buy because the Oracle is big and expensive, and they wanted to have some offerings to customers that didn't want that more complex and expensive system and a cheaper database system. But then the community wasn't too happy, and they forked off the software into a community branch called MariaDB. It's a relational database management system. And of course, these are two alternatives. And they claim it's fast, reliable, scalable, easy to use, and it's quite commonly used in, let's say, small to medium scale database applications, database systems. It's available both as a client server, which means that we have an application server here and a database server. And inside the application server, we run a client that is interfacing the database server. So there is some special software, client-side software, that would access the database. But it also exists as embedded, which means that you can install it on smaller devices that doesn't have server capabilities, like small watches or some devices that you have, mobile phones or whatever, embedded devices. You could read more about the customer base there. And the documentation you could find here. I put it also up on the Blackboard link as a resource page, so you can find more information about MariaDB there. PHP MyAdmin is an interface for administering MySQL databases. So we can create, modify, delete databases, tables, fields, rows. And we can import and export data. And if you haven't, you probably haven't. So if we go to, not that one. If you go to the PHP MyAdmin, it looks something like this. So we have there the various databases. So this is the database, a small database I created for your first assignment. So I can click on a table. I can see my example data here. And I can run SQL queries. I can look at the structure, see what the elements are, and I can change it, which will mean that if I try to change, it will run a DDL operation towards the database to try to modify this schema and the structure. I can export the database into a format so that you can import it in another database. So it's quite a useful tool with a number of nice features that might be useful or will be useful for you. So that's why I think that one of the first things you need to do in the assignment is to get used to PHP MyAdmin. That's a much better interface to use than the standard MySQL command line interface. It's written PHP and it's free and open source. This is basically what I was showing you. And we will also be using Apache. So the Apache web server is where the application is developed. And it, as I said, it interfaces MariaDB. And Apache has a number of built-in or the possibility to run various components that would run the application, and in our case, it's a PHP processor. And the PHP processor runs inside the Apache server. It is the one that interprets the code that we develop. So when we make a script, PHP script, it will be uploaded by the Apache server, passed to the PHP processor for interpretation, and that would invoke app server functionality to deal with, including connecting the database. Yeah. Question? You can, if you want to start hosting any web service. So when I use PHP MyAdmin here, it's Apache server that I'm interfacing. So the PHP MyAdmin is running on top of Apache. So when we develop the code, that code is actually run inside the Apache server. So you wouldn't be able to run the PHP script nicely without an web server. But you could also use it if you want to. You could use it for any web content you want. It's a standard web server. So if you would like to host some other content there, you can also use it there. So you just upload whatever documents, resources you would like to need, and it can serve it. And if you start it, so the Apache server that you have access, I think I have access to one on student web or as a student as well. And whatever you do there will be posted and available or published to the world. Yep. So the first assignment is out there already. I will talk about more about it a little bit later on. Next week, I expect that this week we aren't really moving into the development, so it's going to get things installed. But next week, we should be able to start developing some of the code. And it's the purpose is to give you access to a database, become familiar with these tools, and a small MVC database application. I'll talk more about this next week, what this means. And there are basically 2 weeks of work before you need to submit your report and the software that you develop. Okay, that should be a good time for a break. Before we continue the database content, a couple of that was a question. There were a couple of questions that I would like to address first. And one question was, do you need to buy the textbook? My answer was that depends on you. I would prefer buying one for myself because I like to read through the material, seeing it from an author's perspective, seeing other examples, other types of cases than what we're going to be covering in the lectures. So I would do that, but I know that what we strive for is to make sure that what we address in the lectures and what we focus on in the assignments is what is core of the course. So if you work hard on the assignments and you go through the lectures and try to work out what you need to know, what you need to understand, how this works, then you could probably do quite well without the textbook. So it depends. I also got the question what parts of the textbook is relevant for what we've been covering. And I had forgotten to do that yesterday, so I added this morning. So for this week, these are the chapters, C and B will be the textbook reference. And later on, when we use some of the other material that is being referred to in this learning materials page, then I will add that, say where we are, so that you can keep an eye on if you decide to buy the textbook, and you can keep an eye on where we are, what we expected to cover. But if I think both Dipti and I, what we would the learning outcome we would like you to take from this course would be what we spend most of the time on, and that's what we're going to go through in the lectures and examples and assignments. But personally, I like to see the reasoning behind, see the whole presentation in the textbook form. So I would personally buy it, but that's my preference. So I think whatever you do, I think you should be okay. But it's helpful to have multiple views into this. This could be quite. We have different approaches in the way you present, and you might find one way easier to follow and understand than the other way. So it might be helpful to have alternative ways or alternative sources for getting the material. The other thing to discuss would be, as you know, in the NTNU quality system, in each course you're supposed to have a group of students, one from each study program, that could meet with Dipti and myself three times through the semester to discuss how it works. And this would be especially useful this year, since the first time Dipti and I split the way we split. So we haven't done that before. So there is more chances that something is going to be inconvenient for you. So having a group, one student from engineering, one from communication technology, IT and security, IT management, is it? Security, and one from the programming group, one from each. Did Frode discuss this with you? No, because last year, you will all have algorithms as well. So last year, we used the same three students for the two courses. Might be one way of doing it. Or you may decide to have one group for each. But I'm not going to have you to point out actual students today, but we need to next week. We need to say who from each one. So if some of you volunteer, that's fine. Otherwise, one of the lecture next week, you won't be allowed to leave the lecture hall until we have appointed one for each. But keep in mind that one way to optimize this is to have the same group for the two courses, and then you don't have to pick two names from each class. Okay. Then we move on more into the web architectures. But these review questions were more relevant last year when there was a big break. I started this lecture on a separate day, not immediately after having the other lecture. But we remember the database is the collection of data. the database management system is the application that's actually managing the databases and that the application programmers and users would interface. A database system is basically the database management system, the data dictionary, and may include all the applications that you have developed. Because as I said yesterday, sometimes when we say database, we mean the database system, other times it means data management system, and sometimes it just means the database. So it will be good once in a while if we are more accurate on the terms we use. Why using database management system? What's your view from everything I said last or before the break? What's the number one reason for choosing to use a database management system when you develop an application that's going to store some data? So if you have systems with complex data and many users and many applications, it's definitely the way to go. So it's easier to deal with complexity. If you just have something very, very trivial that you need to store, it may not be the right answer. The system catalog, data dictionary. What is it? It's actually a database. The system catalog is a database of the database or the databases that you have in there. So it's a database. It's a collection of data related to the various databases and users you have. So it's in its own right, it's a database managed by the database management system. So I think that's kind of nice. To have inside the databases management system, you have a database that the database management system is using to maintain itself. Okay, I thought that giving you a little bit of a better flavor or understanding of the various alternatives. This is an example database. So there are two faculties, one the computer science faculty and the other the technology faculty, and three employees. Having offices and some data, plus phones. Now, if we were to, let me see if I have it here. Yeah, start with the hierarchical database. How would this look like in a hierarchical database? Because not all data would be kind of trees hierarchical in nature. In this case, it is. These data, you can nicely put them into a tree structure. And if you have a tree and not the whole forest, then you have one root. If you have a forest, you may have several roots, but you have a root. And what would be, in this case, what would be the natural children of root? You could say this is that would be root. Root would be entomeuric. That would be the root. Everything, all the information related would be here. So this would be entomeuric. That's the root. Okay. What would be children root? What would make sense? Yeah, the faculties. So we will have two faculties because they are non-overlapping. So we have IMT. And we have the technology faculty. Okay. So what will the children of the faculty be? The employees. So the first one, I'm here. Simon is here. And Helge is here. Would you stop there? Because then we put the attributes here. What are the attributes? Well, it's the office, email, and phone. Now, I have two different phone numbers. And they, so it means that phone numbers aren't atomic. I can't put a whole list in here. I need atomic values. An attribute is one single value. So I can't have it. So that means that I need to have a phone here. So I have an office phone, and I have a mobile phone. And Simon, he has only an office phone. And Helga has only an office phone. Question? It's a good question. Why don't we say, okay, you have one office phone and one mobile phone? Works, but what if I have two mobile phones? Or what if I decide later on to have an additional type of phone? So the most open-ended, the most flexible, scalable solution is to actually then say, okay, for each phone we have a type of phone. It might be office, mobile, Skype, whatever phone ID we have. And the actual value, and we may have multiple of them if we want to. Other questions? Where the hierarchical model has some issue is if I happen to have part time, so I worked half of the time here and half of the time there, I will have a problem. I can't have two parents in this in a tree, in a true tree. There will be only one parent. So if you had possibility, then what I could have an attribute here that says that I'm also working here, kind of a cross link, but that would make this into a graph, because now we are having links that go across the tree structure. So that is possible. And we need that. In the hierarchical databases, you need to include links that are more like graphs, but the base structure will be a tree structure. Now, in the network case, what we will do is that you will have a root here as well, and the root will have a link of departments. So there will be an IMT. Next in the link will be the other department, and then we go back to root. So it's a list. It's a set of members. Then we, from the root, we will have the employees. So that's another set. So we could go through and traverse from one to the other following that link. So what about telephone numbers? Basically, we have my office phone, my mobile phone. That's another set or another chain in the graph. Then Simon will have only one office phone. Holger will have only one office phone. Then comes the links between the employees and the faculties. So we need something that links me, and I have only one faculty, so here we also need from INT the link, or there is not necessarily an arrow here. So this is the first member of faculty, this node represents the first member. First member faculty is me in this faculty. And then the next will be Simon in the faculty. But Simon is the one, and his department is only here. So that's why he has going back and forth. And that ends this set. So here in IMT, there are two members. This one is linked to me, and I'm only member of that faculty association. And here, Simon is also only the member. And then Hallgeir, sorry. So he is part of the TUL, or a member of the TUL membership group, and he is the only. Now, in this case, if we wanted me to be also part of TUL, that would be easy, because I would then also have another membership. That would now be linked into here. So it's easy, in this case, it's easy for me to be member of two departments. I could be linked into this membership and into this membership. That was harder here, because this is hierarchical. Are you following? So in the network database, you have graphs, you have paths. This is a path of faculties. This is a path of employees. This is a path of employees in the faculty. This is the path of faculties in which I'm a member. So you have all these paths of different types. And to find data, you need to just follow the proper path to get to the data. So in the relational database case, this will all be tables. So we will have one table for employees, where you will have an ID, and you will have the name, and you will have faculty, assuming that you have one faculty that you're a member of. So you have 1, 2, 3, and that is me, that is Simon. That is Hallgeir. This is for IMT. This is for IMT. And this is for TUL. And then you will have one faculty table where you have the faculty code and the name and whatever attributes. And this will be IMT. And this will be TUL. And then we will have one table for phones. So there will be the owner of the phone, and the type, and the number. So the first phone is owned by me. It's my office phone. The second phone, sorry, is also owned by me, but that's the mobile phone. The second one was Simon's office phone, and the third phone was Hallgeir's office phone. Because this is a foreign key, a reference here. This is a reference here, and these two are reference here. This one is a reference over here. This one's a reference over here, sorry, to the same one. And this one is a reference over here. So in this case, in each table, we have one type of information. We have information about employees, information about phones, information about faculties. And there are cross-references, cross-links. So I can find here information about the faculty. I can find here who owns the phone, information about the owner. Question? Yeah. Yeah. No, it will have to be this way because you can only refer to one. So this will break down if now what do I need to do if I also affiliate with Tull? I can do this here. So that will mean that we need another table. Would will be employee to faculty table, where I say that employee number one works for IMT, employee number one works for Tull, employee number two works for IMT, employee number three works for Tull. That you, so you need a separate table. If you can't refer to just one, then you need a separate table that will list it up. This works when there is one faculty. It's the kind of the same thing here. If you have one parent, it's fine. Then you can have the link in here in the table. But if you have multiple, then it breaks. So we couldn't have a pointer from me to my phones because I have multiple phones. So you can't have one value that points out the phone number. If I had only one phone number, the phone number could be here directly. But since I have multiple phones, I can't do that. It depends on the relationship. But this is what Depty is going to spend quite some time on in the modeling. So in modeling, conceptual modeling, this is what you're going to do. You're going to find where are the relationships. There's a one-to-one, one-to-many, many-to-many relationships. And this is exactly what you need to do in that case. So this is just to illustrate the difference. And we'll talk about, in terms of query languages and functionality, what the difference between these approaches would be. Question? We'll come back to that. But when you create a foreign key, you're gonna tell what the database system shall do. So one thing it can do, you can tell it that if you delete the faculty, it should also delete the row here. You can do that. Or if you delete the faculty, you set this one to null. Or you can't delete the faculty if there is one there. So you decide what you want the database management system to do. But what it does is that it maintains integrity, either by removing the row, setting it to null, or disallowing you to remove it. So this is all controllable. It's the DDL. It's when you define the table and the relationships between the tables, you say what the database system is going to do, the management system is going to do when you try to delete. That's they're going to come back to that towards the end of the modeling lectures. So, we have been through this. Now, the issues here would be that to access this, you will need to traverse. And even in the hierarchy case, you may even need, in that case, need to follow links across the tree structure to come from here to the department. In the in the network solution, you need from root decide, does it make sense to find the person first or the faculty first, and from the faculty which are the links that we're going to be traversing. These two all the first generation databases, they didn't have any ad hoc query languages, meaning that you needed to write a program to actually traverse the structure to get your data. So that was the main reason or the main benefit from a relational database. In SQL, we can combine anything. You can say you join the information from phone with the information about employee, with the information about faculty, and we can easily find the phone numbers for each one and what faculty they belong to in one new table. And we could just use the ad hoc query language to retrieve all that information. And we'll talk more about that when Dipti talks about SQL in a couple of weeks. You'll see how to combine this table to get the information you need. And here, your structure is highly depending on the application and application use. In the relational database, it's all in a table. And which tables you like to mix and merge, doesn't matter. They are equally accessible. Well, here you need to find phone numbers for all in Intel. You need to go here and go there and get the phone numbers, go back here, next one, find the next person, find the next phone numbers. You need to traverse quite a lot to find the phone numbers for a certain faculty. While here, you can just join that one, that one, that one, say, okay, now in that big table where everything is joined, I would like the TEL phone numbers. And you get it easily out. So that's the strength and benefit of having these tables. You're going to see it once Dipti starts on the join and other SQL operators. So the interesting thing is, as I said before today, is that these two models are coming back. So the fourth generation databases, we will see the models again. So the hierarchical database is the what you call document databases in NoSQL, which includes XML databases. I don't know if anyone heard about MongoDB. MongoDB is a hierarchical database where you store documents, and they are hierarchical. You aren't using XML, you're using JSON, but that's kind of similar. You have a tree structure, and you can have these kind of cross-references in addition. For XML, you have XPath and XQuery as query languages. So it's not like here that you in the old case where you had to write a program. We're going to be working quite a lot on XPath, so you get to see how we can interactively query an XML document or XML database if you have an XPath processor. And the same with graph databases. There are graph databases like Neo4j, which is a general graph database, Java-based one, and RDF Triple Store, which is a semantic web database that stores graphs in the form of tuples that refer to each other. And Cypher is the query language in Neo4j, and Sparkle in RDF Triple Store, which are query languages that you can query the content of a graph. So what has happened is that these two models, they were forgotten, and we were all happy doing the relational database, but as we started doing object-oriented programming, and we have objects with trees and graphs, with XML, they're all trees, with the social network, it's all graphs, who you know and your friends, it's all a big graph. So it's convenient to store it as a graph. It's inconvenient to use relational databases to store hierarchies, because then you need to store a link to the parent, to the parent, to the parent, to the parent. But that makes it recursive, and as you will see in querying, recursiveness is difficult in the relational databases. So since data has changed into that business structure format, into more complex structure, we are moving back here. But what we learned, or the database community learned from relational databases, is that you need a query language. And so now XPath, XQuery, and the MongoDB find function has other has possibilities for content-based searching that you didn't have in the old databases. So even if it's coming back in kind of a new shape and a new form. Before we go into the programming part, there are when we talk about relational databases, we need to get a few concepts, familiar with a few concepts. And one is the concept of a relation. A relational database contains relations. And typically, we think of relations as these pointers, the foreign keys from one table to the other table, but in a relational database case, the name relation refers to the table itself. So the table is named a relation. And a relation may have relationship to another relation. So in a relational database, when you say relation, we mean the actual table. And when we talk about attributes, we are actually referring to the columns in that table. So here is the ID attribute. That's the column with all the IDs. The name attribute is the column with all the names. a tuple is the name for a certain row. So this is a tuple in the employee table. You can call it a row, but it's usually called a tuple, which is kind of an instance of that object or of that type. Domain is the data type for attributes. And this is one thing that NoSQL databases and relational databases are very different on, and that is on the strict typing. In relational databases, there is a strict type on the columns. The need to the ID is an int. The name is a string with up to 50 characters. So you have a very strict definition of what are acceptable values for a certain attribute. And that's called the domain, the type of value. So domain could be integers, could be strings, could be dates, could be, we talked about blobs, large binary objects. So there could be different types of attributes, and they will be the domain. Then we talk about degree and cardinality. Degree of a relation is the number of attributes. Cardinality will be the number of tuples or number of rows. So this to describe a table, we describe both the structure, meaning how many attributes, that's the degree, and we can talk about the cardinality, which means how many members or how many rows do we have in the table. A relational database is then a collection of these. So in this case, I might have a relation, if you drop this one, may have a relation database of four relations. And this one will then have link to IMT, sorry, and link to tell, and this one will be person 1, person 2, and person 3, ending up here with references. That will be a relational database with these tables and the keys, that the foreign keys or the references that link the tables together. So in this case, we have the relation is the whole thing. The attributes will be the same as the columns. Degree will be the number of attributes, in this case 5. And the cardinality will be the number of lines or rows in the table, which in this case will be 6. And then you have all the tuples. Domains. Domain for ID seems to be an integer. Domain for title seems to be a string. Artist seems to be a string. Genre seems to be a string, but seems to be only 3 characters. Creation year seems to be a year, which is not necessarily an int, because there are different semantics to year than int. Yep. So, if you talk about objects and classes, a tuple will be the same as an object, and a relation will be the same as a class. Attribute will be a member variable. Domain will be the type of that attribute. And degree will be the number of attributes defined in each class. And then relation would be not just the class, because the class is kind of defining the structure, but the relation is actually all the elements of that class. In relational language, object-oriented languages, you don't typically deal with the collection of all the objects. They exist anywhere in memory and you can link to them, but you don't have them all nicely tied up together. But in this case, they are all stored in the same table. So that's the difference. And cardinality will then be the size of or the number of objects that you had in your or created of a certain type or a certain class. And the relation database will then be the collection of all the objects that you created of all the different types. There are certain properties defined for relations. Dipti is going to come back to this when she starts going more into depth in the relational database design. But it's good to keep it in mind now, because you're going to be using relational database already for the first assignment and program and application. So in the cells here, in each, for each attribute, there could be only atomic values. As I said, here we couldn't have both phone numbers up here. So if you wanted, as you proposed, if you wanted to have multiple phones in the relation, then we need to have an office phone number, a mobile phone number, a fixed line phone number, whatever numbers we had. We have one column for each one of them. But you couldn't have two mobile phone numbers. You can have only one, because these values need to be atomic, each one of them. If you need multiple values, you need a separate table where you say that for this, for this person, there are two phones. And we don't want duplicates. So it's not like we can... in this case, we don't, let's see here. We don't want to repeat the fact that one belongs to IMT. We don't want that, because that would be replication. As we talked about yesterday, replication is the number one evil thing in the database. Because when data is replicated, then it may become inconsistent. So if you delete, and one is deleted, not the other one, the relation is still kept there. So so there shouldn't be any duplicate data. In a relation, the order of attributes don't matter. So you could refer to them in any sequence of attributes you want. As long as there is an ID attribute, a name attribute, and a faculty attribute defined, they're going to be the same table. Order doesn't have any... I mean, in the file system, on files, you need to store them in a certain order. But from a relation database point of view, the order of the attributes don't matter. It's the name of the attribute that matters. And the order of tuples have no significance either. So there is no built-in order here. But the database management system will, of course, store records or the tuples in a certain order. So there will be order in reality, but it's not important for the functionality of the database. May have some performance hits. That's why we have indexes, and we talk about indexes later on. And of course, you can't have two relations with the same name in a database, in one relation schema, and you can't have two attributes in the same table with the same relation with the same name. So they need to be different, so you can identify. But it is possible to have an ID in different tables, because ID, the attribute name, is linked to, related to one specific table. So you can have the same name, can be used both here and here, doesn't matter. But you can't have two name columns in the same relation. There are two types of keys in this system that we need to deal with. One is the primary key, and primary key is the one that identify as a row here. So typically, this ID would be the primary key. The faculty code would be the primary key, because you don't have two faculties with the same code. You don't have two users with the same ID. And here, for the phone, you will probably say that owner plus phone number will be the primary key, because that's what will always be unique. You don't want to know twice that one person has the same number, but you may want to allow two users to refer to the same phone number, as user of the same phone number. So you need both the user ID and the phone number as part of the key that uniquely identify the code. And here, the same here, it's the combination of let's see, of the employee and the faculty. It's a combination of the two. So employee, because there are two faculties for one employee, and there are two employees for one faculty. So that's why the primary key is something that uniquely identifies person, and here it or the row, and here it can be the ID, here it can be the code, but here you need to have a key that is composite, unless you create another phone ownership ID. You can always do that. This is what Deepti is going to come back to when she's talking about design, how you design the primary keys. And then we have foreign keys. And in this case, the foreign keys are these that I'm drawing the arrows that refer to something in another place. So that if I try to remove a person, I'm going to remove the phone numbers related to the person at the same time. So I don't have phone numbers here referring to persons that we don't know anything about. So it's going to be a kind of a hyperlink in that respect. So if you look at the sample database that I'm having, I have a database of CDs and music genres, and here you can see a genre, so pop, hip hop, rock. These link to the codes here. So these are the primary keys in the two, so meaning that there are no two music genres with the same code, and there are no two CDs with the same ID. And then the foreign keys would be these ones referring to a certain genre here. It is quite okay to have music genres for which we have no music. That doesn't matter. I mean, we can hear. There's no problem knowing that there exists Swedish music. That's okay. We don't need to have any music or any CD from Swedish music on it. But we cannot have any genre code here that does not exist in the music genre. Because the whole purpose is that this is a foreign key or is a link to some information here. And if whatever we find here needs to match one over here. Question? This is what the relational database management system is capable of doing. So when we design, we need to tell, using DDL, we need to tell the database that this is a foreign key to this. So this is what you're going to do in the modeling, is to identify what these relationships are and what foreign keys you need. And then when you create the database in MySQL or wherever, you will tell the database that these are the foreign keys, these are the primary keys, and then the database management system will ensure that the integrity rules are being maintained. Then you will get, it depends, as I said, you may get an error. So when you define the foreign key, you're going to define what will happen if you try to delete. So what or insert, what will happen, you can, as I said before, you could choose either to leave this as null, meaning we don't know the genre, or you can say by you don't accept to delete, or you say, okay, if you delete classical music, then all classical music CDs are going to be deleted as well. So these are the choices we have, and then the database management system would pick the choice that we had. But that's going to come back to that at the end of the modeling lectures. Then we talk about the schema. And the schema is a description of the relation. So for a CD, the schema is that we have an ID, which is an integer. We have a title that is a character string that can vary in length up to 256 characters. We have an artist. We have a genre. And we have a year. So that's the relational schema. And that's what's stored in the data dictionary. And we have this for the other relations. And the relational database schema would be the schema or the collection of all the relation schemas. So in this case, it would be the CD schema, the music genre schema, whatever relations we have. And the relational database schema will be the collection of all of them. Let me just do this before we take a break. So for ad hoc querying, as I said, in the relational database case, we can combine these tables and create one big table in which we get all the information and we can get the rows that fit, for instance, what are the phone numbers linked to a toll member. We can then join this with this, and then we find that the toll member would be, or in this case, toll members would be 1 and 3. And then 1 and 3, we can see what are the phone numbers for 1 and 3. So we can pick up these 3, and you can get it by just combining the tables. Well, in this case, I need to go to toll and visit this one and visit this link here to find the phone numbers. In this case, I will start going to toll and I will have to traverse the members of toll, and for each member I will have to traverse the list of phones. So you see there's quite a bit of traversal to find all this information in the network case and a little bit in the hierarchy case. Well, this is the strength of relational databases. Everything is a table, and whenever there's a foreign key, we can just join them together and find the link easily throughout the tables. Okay, then we'll take a break there. Meet on Friday.